stand by while NCLA cuts through the noise to signal abuse of administrative power. This is Administrative Static with Mark Chenoweth and John Vecchione.
Mark and John with you, and we need to update that intro because Jeanine Yunus is back with us as co-host, and glad to have her. And we are joined today by our colleague, Senior Litigation Counsel Russ Ryan, here at NCLA for the next two segments to talk about, first, a case that we just had oral argument at the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit. And this is one of the cases pushing back against the Department of Education over what we think are unlawful efforts to cancel student loan debt without Congress having authorized the doing of that. And I guess maybe, Russ, first I'll ask you to explain what this particular case is about, and then we can find out how oral argument went. But the case is Mackinac Center for Public Policy and the Cato Institute v. Miguel Cardona, Secretary of Education.
Yeah, so this is it arises from something the administration called the one-time account adjustment. They announced it a couple of years ago, I think. It's pretty convoluted, but boiled down to its essence, what they've done is they've basically changed the rules on certain forgiveness programs so that instead of having to work and make payments for, say, 10 years or 20 years or 25, depending on what the program is, they're going to count the pandemic period where payments were suspended and interest was suspended, so nobody was making payments.
Which was already a favor.
Yes.
And right, to do that suspension.
So what the administration said is, well, we're going to effectively pretend that you were making payments for those 3 years and count those periods towards the requirements to get forgiveness under these various programs, one of which is the public service loan forgiveness, PSLF.
Yeah. So only the administrative state could say that non-payments are payments. That's crazy.
It's a contradiction, and it's an
oxymoron. That part, the one question I have is that part of the Congress paused it for some portion of time by an actual statute?
Yes, they did. For that, that's a different case, but you're right. Congress did pause payments and interest, I think it was in March.
But even that didn't count the non-payments as payments. That statute didn't.
No. I'm getting at.
And that was only a six-month pause. Then starting with the Trump administration and into the Biden administration, the administration, just by fiat, kept extending that pause, even though Congress said it's supposed to stop in September 2020. That's a different case that we've talked about before, and I'm sure we'll talk about again.
So Congress passed these laws like the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Plan saying if you make 10 years of payments and 120 monthly payments while working for a public service or public interest entity, it doesn't have to be a public interest conservative entity like the Mackinac or a public interest libertarian entity like Cato. This applies to any public interest organization, left, right, center.
Sure.
What have you? Any 501c3, basically.
Right. And even government work.
Right.
I think most participants in the program work for the government.
So state and local government in particular. There may be some federal government employees
sure.
as well.
Yep.
Although I know there are some other programs that are government specific, too. So any one of these programs, and the number of payments you have to make might vary. The one that I'm most familiar with is PSLF, which is 10 years and 120 payments. And so now, even though Congress said in order to get your student loan debt forgiven, which, by the way, that can be a significant chunk at the end of that 10-year period that someone might still have left that gets forgiven. And that can be a large
especially
sum of money.
Especially if you're a lawyer and you paid for law school.
Yeah, absolutely. And so now, without Congress having said anything, the administration is saying, no, you don't have to make 10 years and 120 payments. You only have to make 7 years. and whatever 120 payments minus 36
I think it's 80 something.
Okay, 84 payments or something. Then you get the student loan debt forgiven. Is that the gist of it?
Yes, although it's a little bit more nuanced than that. And the government really harped on this during the argument. You still have to work for 10 years, but you only need to make 7 years worth of payments. So in effect, an employee who would have had to essentially put in 13 years because they weren't making payments for three of the 10 years, you'd add 3 years on the end, still can get forgiven in 10 years. The government lawyer was basically saying, well, you still have to, nobody can get forgiven in less than 10 years. Well, so what?
You're still counting
the
non-payments
employer
as payments.
Was entitled to the incentive to stay working for us for 13 years because you weren't making payments for three of those years. So that's, I think, where it really comes down to.
What was the amount? What's the total billions that this is about?
I don't even remember. Yeah. I think on this particular program, it's impossible to calculate. Because we don't know. You know,
how many people are going to take advantage of it?
Yeah, the administration has really not given a whole lot of detail on what it's going to cost.
Well, the way these programs work, John, is people usually don't sign up for them until they get to the end of this. And I don't, Janine, maybe you can comment on this, but people don't. It's not like when you join year one that you tell your employer, "Oh, I'm doing the PSLF program." Usually, it's after you get to the end of the time and you need the employer to validate that you've been there for 10 years
or
whatever.
They actually encourage you to do it every year. So that was what I did, just to get a certification from your employer.
Ah, okay.
And my people at Cause of Action were extremely, as soon as they got there. So your mileage may differ, but my point is that all these student loan programs, certainly the one that the Supreme Court struck down, were creating huge holes in the deficit that Congress would wrangle over these amounts of money all the time. These are not amounts of money.
Oh, these are billions.
That Congress would not go, it's not like $50,000 for a chicken coop in Des Moines or something.
No, it's real money. It's real money and it adds up.
And the pause was $5 billion a month. We know that. So this isn't a pause. This is actual premature forgiveness. So it's going to be way more than that. So it's a substantial sum of money. So what kind of questions did the panel ask? Were they, I know that the standing has been an issue in some of these cases. Maybe we should start there.
Yeah, that's really the only issue on the table right now anyway, because the district court summarily dismissed the complaint for lack of standing. So that was really the only issue on appeal. We drew an unusual panel in that two of the three judges are senior judges.
Some circuits don't have a rule that you can't have more than one senior judge on a panel.
Yeah. So anyway, the biggest question I think we got, and this was from Judge Mathis, who was the
presiding judge.
Judge, the one that's not a senior judge.
And a brand new appointee from Biden, if I remember
correctly. Relatively
new, right?
Yeah. I think 2022 he was appointed.
Okay.
His main focus was, okay, I kind of get the economic theory you're putting forth, but he's saying, who are these actual competitors that are stealing these people away from you? And if you can't identify those particular competitors, he seemed to have a problem with that. And, I thought Shang Li, our colleague who did the argument, did a fantastic job responding to that it's just not necessary. So to me, that was the biggest hurdle that Chang had to get over.
It's not necessary to plead that in a complaint. I've certainly never said who my competitors were. If I said there was a economic harm from disadvantage, you don't say it. I mean, that's more like antitrust type stuff.
Yeah, I don't think the cases require you to be able to name who your specific competitors are. But
you don't even know who the employees are necessarily. So how could you possibly, if I knew which employee was, I'd say, oh, well, John, he's likely to go work for this competitor, or Russ is likely to go work for that competitor. But if I don't even know that the employee is in the program, which you don't have to know as the employer until the end, how would you possibly be able to name, who the competitor is?
Yeah, we were, I think, more expecting the analysis of the district judge, which was, you can't name specific employees or future prospects by name who are affected by this. And Judge Mathis kind of took the flip side of that. You can't name me which specific for-profit employer is going to take your employees away from you.
Is that because you did a good job answering the district court's objections in the brief?
Probably. But he seemed uncomfortable with this notion that, well, all you can say about your competition is it sounds like it's the entire economy other than qualifying employers under...
Well, it is, right? I mean, it's every private sector job for which one of your employees would be qualified to apply. If they're a lawyer, that's going to be certain jobs. If they're a public policy analyst, that's other jobs, lobbying jobs, whatever.
And if the universe of competitors who are getting this new benefit as opposed to what you already had is vast, that seems to me like that's even more economic injury than if it's only a handful of companies.
No, that's a good point, because it seems more likely that there will be opportunities out there in the world that they would prefer to take advantage of, especially once this incentive has already been exhausted.
Yep.
Any other questions at the oral argument, maybe from one of the other judges?
There were some standard questions like, what's your best Sixth Circuit case? And I think Shang was ready for that. It's a case called Growth Alliance. I don't think there's time to get into it, but it's a pretty... analogous case where it was an economic...
Where standing was found.
Right. Competitive standing based on an advantage that a regulator had given companies in a different state versus the plaintiff state.
Well, fantastic. Thanks for letting us know about this case, Russ. And again, congratulations to Shang Li on a good oral argument. We'll have to see how it pans out. But the case is Mackinac Center for Public Policy and Cato Institute v. Cardona, U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit. Thanks, Russ.
Thank you.